Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Soleri Report. Soleri's goal is to help people live a free and inspired life. And of course, health is a very important part of this. And to stay healthy, it's important to take care of your dental health. But if you go to a regular dentist, then you can run into issues because some of the treatments can be very toxic, invasive, damaging. But sometimes you really, really need this. So what to do? So today we're going to introduce you to a revolutionary new treatment. It's called the ozone treatment, or it's been around for some time, but it's not very well known. It's non-invasive, non-toxic. And today I have a very special guest, Jacob Brandsma, who has been pioneering this treatment for the last 20 years here in the Netherlands. And we're going to discuss that today. Jacob, welcome.
Okay, thank you for having me.
Or can I call you Jacob?
Sure.
So to start, can you tell a little bit about yourself and why you got interested in this treatment, the ozone treatment?
I was born in the Netherlands, Bolsward, a region called Ugelklooster. I've always been quite interested in dentistry, but the regular dentistry with the drilling didn't appeal to me. So in the 70s, I came in contact with chiropractic. So I decided to become a chiropractor, went to the California Bay Area, by the way, to start. However, I did the study in the UK, finishing in 1984. And I've always been on the lookout for innovations. So when I read a smart article in the newspaper in the year 2003, 9th of February, I was immediately interested. So I delved into it.
And then you studied it, because in 2003, the machines were not on the market yet.
They became available in the market.
Okay.
So I was with a dental hygienist at that time. So we started a discussion and he was expecting that, it would come out soon. But nobody started it. And even after 6 months, nobody had started it. So I was getting a bit angry because I wanted to get treated myself. I had a loose tooth, the 3-7. And we had a discussion with Elche Ritsmeyer's name. And he was quite enthusiastic. So we set up a collaboration. He would do the treatments. And I would guarantee my finances, take out the lease titles and everything. So, and we started in Amsterdam in the beginning of 2004.
Okay. So, and the ozone treatment, what is it? How does it work?
Ozone is essentially a radical oxygen, O2. It is oxygen with a higher rate of vibrations, lacking two electron orbitals. So ozone is really an extreme electron acceptor. That's what it is, basically. So it will withdraw the electron orbitals from bacteria, evaporating them into CO2. So that's why ozone can make the things, including the teeth, sterile.
Yeah, so what kind of effects does ozone have on the teeth?
It'll harden it out. It will improve immunity, and it make them, of course, sterile, so that the teeth can more or less generate them by themselves.
So I think that's a very important point, because I never realized that teeth have the ability to remineralize and to heal themselves. Because usually you go to a dentist and it's like it's a piece of rock in your mouth. And if there's something wrong, then you need to drill and fill it. But there's actually this healing capacity.
Sure. There is a metabolism of the microbes. Mm-hmm. And depending on the nutrients you provide. So on the one hand, you have the oxygen and the nitrogen groups. On the other hand, you have the carbohydrates. The carbohydrates are mainly the sugars. Glucose will fall apart in citric acid. And to balance out the pH, you need plenty of oxygen to balance out the pH. If the oxygen is lacking, or if the oxygen is saturated, the acidity will go to a pH of a one or a lower even.
Mm-hmm.
And this will cause pain, cavities, periodontitis, pockets, even jaw infections and what have you. So it's basically nutrition lacking oxygen. And then you get virulent bacteria, viruses, and even spirochetes and things like that.
So what kind of nutrition helps you get more oxygen into your body?
Well, basically, the nutrition is to get the right kind of proteins,
mm-hmm.
to get the cellular membranes working properly,
mm-hmm.
To get rid of plenty enough negative charge, electrons and protons,
mm-hmm.
to balance out the acidity. And you need the oxygen to take up the electrons, mm-hmm. to balance out the pH.
Okay. Okay, so does the treatment have any risks to it?
Well, you have to be careful about the dosage. You don't need to overdo it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, a typical application is maybe 20, 30 seconds.
Mm-hmm.
If you do, like, say, 10 minutes on one single tooth,
mm-hmm.
the whole tooth will disintegrate eventually. So if you have a very weak tooth with lots of cracks,
mm-hmm.
and you apply too much ozone, there may be some risk of disintegration.
Okay.
So you got to be careful because it's quite strong.
Ah, okay. But you know the correct doses, so this doesn't happen then.
Yeah, the standard dosage is 20 seconds
for
a tooth surface.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes when it's very bad, you may go up to 60 seconds.
Mm-hmm.
But that's really the limit. The first time, normally the limit is 20, maybe 30 seconds. You can't keep going for several minutes.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to be too much.
So what I found interesting is that it cleans all the bacteria out.
That's right.
Yes, and it goes through your whole teeth.
Absolutely. It's a porous substance. Mm-hmm. You know, the enamel and the dentin, it's composed of tubules.
Mm-hmm.
Consisting of phosphates, calcium phosphates, and it's permeable right up into the apex of the tooth.
Mm-hmm.
Even jaw infections can be cured with ozone and additional measures, of course.
Because when these bacteria disintegrate, then they are not left there. They are
sucked out. They are kind of evaporated by the ozone.
Mm-hmm.
Because the ozone is essentially, like I said, it's an extreme electron acceptor.
Mm-hmm. So it's a power oxidant.
That's the oxidation work.
Yes.
So the bacteria will disintegrate into mainly carbon dioxide. So it's pulled out as a carbon dioxide.
So what I found interesting is because it's like a very powerful oxidant.
Absolutely.
And it cleans out the bacteria, but it's not damaging the teeth or the gums. How is that possible? I even read that it is a powerful oxidizer at a dramatically lower concentration than chlorine with none of the toxic side effects. One molecule of ozone is equal to between 3,000 and 10,000 molecules of chlorine, and it kills pathogenic organisms 3.5 times faster. But it's not damaging the gums and the teeth. How is that possible?
Because the teeth consist of calcium phosphate, which is a oxygen material anyway.
Mm-hmm.
So you strengthen the calcium phosphate. You produce a chemical ascension,
mm-hmm.
of the calcium phosphate. So all you do is make it really stronger. You build up a stronger immunity. So you make the teeth sterile, but also, mm-hmm. you're curing the teeth.
Wow. So it's like double. It's non-invasive.
Absolutely.
It's not toxic. It has a healing effect. And so for what kind of issues can you apply this? Like there's caries or cavities or...
Yeah. Toothache, pockets, periodontitis. Cavities, but also jaw infections,
mm-hmm.
the apex tooth issues, even bad regular root canal treatments, anything which involves acidity and microbes, anything could benefit.
So in your practice, I saw a lot of people who had positive experiences, and they said regular dentists had recommended the root canal, and then they didn't want to take that, and they went to you, and they were very happy because their pain went away and there was no root canal necessary anymore.
Right.
But if you already have a root canal, so I saw this documentary, which is called The Root Cause. And there was a guy who had very seriously chronic disease issues. He was like tired and he couldn't figure out why. And in the end, he discovers that it's probably his root canal teeth. And in this documentary, there are a couple of dentists that say, well, in no other practice in health, we would keep a dead organ in the body.
Mm-hmm.
And now you have a dead teeth in the body that's almost right. always infected because you cannot clean it out.
That's right.
So what happens if you treat an existing root canal with ozone? Like, do you still need to do something? Can you keep that tooth in there, or should you still do something else?
Most of the time you can leave the tooth alone, but you need some more dosage. Instead of normally like two visits, you may need four visits. Okay. Because it's harder to get through the lateral tubules, because the main root canal is closed, so you need to get it into it sideways, which is a bit more challenging.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, in about 98% of the cases, bad root canals can be treated afterwards, and you can stabilize the toxic effects. You get it more chemically stable, you know. You get a more less chemically active whatever remains there.
Okay.
So I'm not saying everything will get 100%, but maybe you get it 98%. You get still, you may keep some bacteria in there, but like 98%, and the 2% the body can hopefully cope with it.
And so with this treatment, like, what is the success and failure rate? And at what point would you say, well, if it's not working, you should go to a regular dentist?
Well, sometimes I have people with heart conditions who are on cholesterol statins, and they have, you know, too low resistance. Then in very exceptional cases, I might send refer them, preferably to Germany.
Okay, why?
Because they are too stubborn in this country. I'm sorry, sorry to say. You can't really have a communicative relationship. So I prefer to send them to Germany.
Okay. And they are more... Because in Germany, this is a regular treatment, right?
In Germany, it's a part of regular dentistry.
Because that made me wonder, why is this not part of regular dentistry?
Because of the minister, Fleur Agema. That's the reason why. It's quite amazing, isn't it? We've been consulting with the politicians, you know, since the year 2009. And then we had the minister, Edith Schippers. And in the beginning of 2012, she decided we're going to liberate the dentistry. So then you had a free treatment, free tariffs, including the Helozone, which was quite amazing. So the insurance companies started to reimburse, but it only started lasted 6 months.
Oh.
Because then came Fleur Agema. She said everything is gonna be, going to get too expensive. We need to regulate it again. So now dentists have a protocol situation. They can only choose from menus, and then they can score what they call prestatio codes.
Yes.
And then they can only use the regular codes to have their reimbursement. So it's absolutely a disaster.
Definitely.
In my humble opinion.
It is.
Because they need to do bad things to make money. I'm sorry to say.
Yes, because that's another point. Like I mentioned this in the beginning, but perhaps you can comment on that. That many of the regular treatments can be quite damaging and sometimes unnecessary.
Oh yeah, even a drilling in a tooth. I mean, you're pushing the bacteria deeper into the root, and then you can place a composite filling. But lasting the duration of a composite filling is about 8 to 12 years.
Mm-hmm.
So after 12 years, if not earlier, you need to do again.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe the next step is then a root canal treatment. And then maybe after another 10 years, you know, you get a crown or an extraction or implants. You know, it's a, I mean, it's a terrible system.
So in what countries is this, so in Germany it's applied, but are there other countries where this is more widely adopted?
Yeah, the most popular is probably Brazil.
Oh, okay.
What I'm getting from the seminars.
Okay.
So surprisingly, they had a motion in parliament,
mm-hmm.
and the measurement was voted in. So I see the professor at the ozone seminars I go to in the United States.
Mm-hmm.
Also in Cuba is quite popular. But there are about 15 countries where it's more or less recognized. But it has not become a big breakthrough.
No, I think, yeah, so I was searching for some of the peer-reviewed articles on ozone treatment. And what I noticed was that there is quite a lot of research, but there are a lot of complaints about the quality of the research. And then because it's not double-blind or it's not a double-blind lab study. And I thought, well, that's interesting because you need a lot of money for those types of studies.
That's right.
And that's going to break into the business case of some of the more vested interest, probably.
Absolutely.
But for this, so this is a systematic review that was published in 2024, a peer-reviewed article. And systematic review is that they didn't cherry-pick the articles, but they tell you that they did a certain search function through which databases they went. They found 215 clinical studies. So that already kind of indicates that this serious study study object, I believe. And they say the study suggests that ozone application, regardless of the protocol applied, is comparable to other interventions in terms of clinical outcomes and antibacterial activity, with no reported adverse effects and good patient acceptance. It's a non-invasive approach to treat caries in primary dentition. So also very good for children.
Absolutely.
And also it's a good preventative measure.
Absolutely, yeah.
Because it has the curing effect. So it also made me wonder about the regular dentists. Like, are they there to help and heal their patients? Like, what is their motivation? Because if you're motivated to help people, then you should look into such a treatment.
Yeah, but I mean, any dentist, they are very good people, you know?
Mm-hmm.
They have a very honest intention to help, I would think. But it's really the politics on the one hand, mm-hmm. you know, especially in this country. But then the machines are quite challenging to use, you know?
Why?
Because they tend to break down if you're not very careful.
Oh.
Especially the first generation was very challenging. I had four machines and they had to go to the workshop every 6 months to recalibrate it, you know, to break down. And then you got the next generation about 6 or 7 years ago. They are much better,
mm-hmm.
but still you need to put a lot of attention to it.
Okay.
So it's for the dentist, it's quite challenging. And they usually get the one machine.
Mm-hmm.
If the one machine breaks down and you don't have a working backup, you know, the machine ends up in a closet. So it's also, it's not very much like encouraged
mm-hmm.
Through marketing or what have you, you know. There's not a big money interest to push this so much.
No, so because those machines, that's an example of the innovation. So to improve this, you need a higher usage, higher adoption, and then these machines
right.
can be improved. But perhaps we can go into some of the history of this ozone, because
yeah.
I found it interesting that medical ozone was discovered by Schönbein.
Yeah, but even before that, where you had Martin van Maren,
okay,
like 1785.
Uh-huh.
He did some electrolysis, you know, with tin, zinc, and antimony, and he created ozone without, you know much about it. And then, Schoenberg, he did more or less the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
And he was creating ozone. He could smell it, but he could not really describe essentially what it was.
Mm-hmm.
And then you got the Nikola Tesla with his high voltage discharge, creating ozone.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, maybe you could call it plasma, but they suspected that it could be beneficial.
Mm-hmm.
And already in the 30s, you had ozone machines.
Yes.
You had ozone discharge in like light bulbs, and you could apply it to different parts of the body. I've seen the machines, very interesting.
Hi there, this is the Violet Ray. It's a therapeutic device of the 1930s. It was invented around 1890s by Nikola Tesla, where in the meantime, two researchers in France, Paul Houdin and Jacques d'Arsonval, were working on similar things. As I said, it's a medical device, it's electric. It's a knob you hold in your hand. And then there are these electrodes, which you apply on the top, and I'll show in a short time what they do. There are here three original models, old models. This is a WAPA, a German company, I think. This is a Geissler, certainly German. This is Mobil, I think Swiss. And this is a modern version. It's Chinese, and it's presently sold in beauty centers to get rid of wrinkles. So that's basically the only thing for which it is still sold today. Whereas in older times, when these were produced, there was a whole list of things, of conditions which were supposed to be cured by using these devices. You probably never heard of them, because around the 1940s and 1950s, the American government and the FDA sued a lot of the companies that were producing them, forcing them to close down, and so they were basically forgotten. So let's see how they work. So I take an electrode, I put it in. This is a very pointy one, so it's supposed to be used to treat very localized conditions. I turn it on, it makes this buzzing sound, and you can see that this one is quite weak, but there's a ray coming out. For the head, for the hair, because the violet rays was claimed to also help for hair loss and baldness. So this is supposed to be, you should comb your hair with this thing. Now if I take a general purpose electrode, you can see that you just use it on the surface of your body wherever you have a condition that you need to treat, and just move it around something like this. That's what you're supposed to do. There's even one to breathe ozone, because basically when you have these sparks in the air, this generates ozone, which is the same smell when there's a thunderstorm that you smell in the air. And this is ozone is one of the most powerful antiseptic in the world. So that's why it's supposed to kill all bacteria on your hands or wherever you use it. And this is for breathing it. So you're supposed to turn it on, and there's a chamber, and then I go like this. And there's a slight taste of ozone, which is not really pleasant, but supposed to kill a lot of bacteria.
But then in the 90s, you had Dr. Edward Lynch, the professor. And he started to experiment with all kind of gases, even noble gases, hydrogen. You mentioned already chlorine. I mean, even ammonia gas vapor could work. But it may leave a bad taste in your mouth. So the only viable gas was then ozone. And he worked together with Cavo. And he made a unique system applying the ozone under a vacuum. So first you apply a vacuum, 40 millibar, and then it's safely circulated in the vacuum. So if it then leaks, it leaks to the inside. So you don't get a lot of ozone into the oral cavity, which is better for the patient and also better for the dentist. Because if you're breathing too much ozone the whole day, you know, you may die. In the UK, we had Julian Holmes, one of the pioneers. He eventually started with a trace, but about 6 years ago, he died. Quite suspicious. So, but really, but
he was not using this.
He was also using this, but then he thought, "Oh, I can do it quicker." So he started with trace.
Trace,
a whole bit. A trace.
Yeah,
so you do the all the three. You do the whole or upper or lower tension at once. And then channeling the ozone through the trace.
So perhaps too much leakage then.
Too much leakage, probably. I mean, it's a suspicion. But the Edward Lynch, he got the Helozone on the market. So it's really to his credit.
Good, and that's the machine that you're using as well, or that's the only machine on the market.
Well, that's the only machine I like. There are different machines. You have ozone machines in Brazil. They have made a more or less copied their own system. And you have a lot of machines with ozone, open ozone. You apply the ozone and then you suck it out with the saliva suction, which I don't like personally. I would not be in dentistry without the Helozone. And, you know, that's the only viable machine, in my humble opinion. I mean, the Helozone system.
So I also noticed that after you give this treatment, there is very specific nutritional advice. And you, in the beginning, already commented on this, that, that it's really nutrition that's affecting the teeth. But can you explain a little bit more what kind of eating habits, cause these dental issues, and how you should you adapt your nutrition for healthy teeth?
Yeah, in the beginning, I didn't do anything with nutrition. So what I saw, there were patients who were responding very good, and then you had patients had barely responding anything. So I went into Weston Price and Otto Warburg, Hans Krebs. So they are really explaining like the metabolism and physiology of a cancer, which is very common to the problem of caries, which is physiologically quite essentially the same process. So to balance out the acidity, you need more oxygen and more nitrogen. And the nitrogen need to preferably be connected to lipids to build up the membranes, the cellular membranes. So you have a human cell which is positively charged on the inside, and a living cell needs to expel electrons and protons. So that's why you need good membranes consisting of lipids, and you need good nitrogen groups for the electron transport chain to get to relieve the electrolytes and the protons. So most effective is really a good animal protein of the right kind, including like a mozzarella or goat cheese, but also A2 beef or hamburgers or whatever.
Perhaps we should explain what A2 beef is.
It's the non-Holstein cows. You know, the Holsteiners are like inbred cows, and they have too much morphine proteins in their products, which can eventually lead to diabetes, can lead to autism, it can lead to rheumatism, things like that. It's like described in the book, The Food Paradox. There's quite a bit of literature on that. So nowadays they're even breeding back to A2, or you can do different cows, like Jerseys or Flakfie or things like that. So you need the older type of cows, which are not so bad manipulated.
Yeah, you mentioned the work of Warburg, because what I found interesting, he basically says cancerous cells, they are always in an acidic environment.
Yeah.
They eat a lot of sugar, and there's something going wrong with this oxygen chemistry. They're not... they're always in a low oxygen environment.
Hi there. Today we're going to look at the Warburg effect, which is the hallmark of cancer. So let's get started. In the 1920s, Otto Warburg and his co-workers found out that the cancer cells have increased glycolysis rate, despite the presence of oxygen. And we called that aerobic glycolysis, which is also known as the Warburg effect. Shall we look into detail? In normal cells, glucose will convert to pyruvate by a process called glycolysis. In the presence of oxygen, the pyruvate will generate 36 moles of ATP in the mitochondria through oxidative phosphorylation. Some parts of the pyruvate will also convert to lactate, but the amount produced is insignificant. While in the absence of oxygen, the cells will convert pyruvate to lactate and generate only 2 moles of ATP. This process is known as anaerobic glycolysis. However, in proliferating or tumor cells, there is an increased uptake of glucose, which increases the rate of glycolysis regardless of whether oxygen is present. Only a small amount of pyruvate will enter the mitochondria, and most of the pyruvate will undergo lactic acid fermentation and causes uncontrolled proliferation of cells. This phenomenon is known as the aerobic glycolysis, which is the Warburg effect. So, why do cancer cells activate glycolysis despite the presence of oxygen? This is to assure the synthesis of ATP when tumor outgrows its oxygen supply. Secondly, the metabolic intermediates of aerobic glycolysis, they provide raw material for synthesis of cellular components and rapidly dividing cells. In addition, they also favor tumor growth. We also know that in aerobic glycolysis, there is an increase in the conversion of pyruvate to lactate, leading to accumulation of lactic acid. This decreases extracellular pH, which favors tumor invasion and also suppresses immune effectors.
I always learned that if you eat a lot of animal protein, it makes you more acidic.
No.
No? Okay.
Now, the acidity is ruled by oxygen.
Okay.
In Germany, it's called Sauerstoff. You know, in this country, it's called Zuurstoff.
Mm-hmm.
So it's already in a word. Zuurstoff literally means Sauerstoff. So it's essentially, if you have plenty of oxygen, that will basically regulate the pH. So you have to get the oxygen into the cell. And you have to get functional membranes with enough amino groups.
So the functional membranes, that's the lipids and the proteins.
That's right.
And the oxygen, what do you eat or what are your habits to improve the oxygen in your body?
Doing a lot of breathing. Oxygen goes through a stage of a gradient, you know. In the fresh air, you have a high vibration of oxygen with a little saturation of electrons. And when the oxygen is used up, it saturates with the electrons more and more. So you get relative negatively charged oxygen, eventually leading to bleach, which is pretty poisoning. So you do plenty of breathing. At least two times a day, you go outside, walking, you know, moving about, and do deep breathing exercises. You don't get the oxygen out of the food.
Okay, but there are no foods that you can eat that you have better oxygen saturation?
Well, you can, for instance, eat barley instead of wheat. So you get, again, more amino groups in the membranes. So you get better respiration of the cells. You can eat to improve the oxygenic respiration cellularly. But you need to do plenty of breathing to get the oxygen in.
Okay. And do you think there's also an effect of EMFs? Because I know that, like, sometimes they say that the electromagnetic frequencies, they're bad for the cell health, also the oxygen in the cells. And you explained this whole electron transfer, and I'm wondering if these electromagnetic fields also impact this.
I would think so. I would think so strongly, because the cellular health is dependent on the microvoltage across the membranes. If it's going below 70, like lower than 40, maybe affected by these EMS radiation, the cellular membranes stop functioning properly. They may not actually get damaged, but the respiration issues are getting stagnated. It's essentially the electron transport chain, the proton pump, and the oxygen cannot draw out the metabolites of the cell. So you get a stagnancy, and then you get a fermentation, essentially caries, but also cancer. It's the same process.
Fascinating. So you also mentioned Weston Price. What parts of his work have you adopted in your nutritional advice and also your recognition of dental issues and healing?
Well, he went to research a lot of Aboriginal groups, you know, which ate natural food. And then he compared it to people eating industrialized food, mainly starches and things like that.
Yes.
So what I learned from him is stop eating starches, especially from wheat. So that's really the main thing. And he found that none of the natural Aboriginals were vegetarian. Nobody, which was quite interesting.
Yeah.
But then you shouldn't get dogmatic, because also I believe that you can live as a breatharian. By breathing a lot of oxygen, you can draw the oxygen and the nitrogen directly from the air, although it's a limited group who are successful doing it. But it's really, it's the cellular balance.
Yeah.
Oxygen, nitrogen on the one hand, and carbohydrates on the other hand. It's really the balance and the cellular metabolism.
So if you have a kind of rule of thumb nutritional advice, what are the things you should really do or not do in terms of your eating habits?
Well, it depends on your stage of evolution. I mean, if you have a calamity with a toothache, I would say make sure you have plenty of oxygen in the area. And you can support it by like A2 beef. You know, you eat small pieces of hamburger sausage, even if it's 10 or 20 gram, at about around 60, because you want to save the enzymes.
60 degrees Celsius.
That's right.
Yeah.
To balance out to start the physiology of the cells again, and to attract the calcium phosphate. So you need to I would say make sure you get plenty of animal protein temporarily. And if you're a vegetarian, you can like work with barley or oats even. And other thing, I would say dissolve it in like a cream, because then you get the fatty acids dissolving the amino groups, which will help the physiology of the cell again.
Okay.
And if you're a breatharian or sun gazer, you can do that. But then you may need to spend like 90 minutes on your protocol. It needs plenty of discipline, which some people don't have. So I'm not saying that you cannot get around being a vegan or something, but then you need to have the proper protocols with regard to breathing and maybe even spiritual exercises, because I believe you can get it straight from the atmosphere.
And so when your teeth are healed, what are then the dietary recommendations?
Well, then you can do as you like.
But also eating candy?
Sure. You can drink a cola again if you want. But you may want to do like precautionary measures for maybe 2 or 3 days a week. And then if you can handle it, you know, you can let go a little bit.
Okay.
But don't eat mangoes or fruits every day. It's going to be too much. If you do that too much, it will go down again.
Okay. Even regular fruits?
You have to be careful. I would say you can do it like 50-50, okay. Maybe 3 out of the 7 days.
Okay.
Because fruits is purely carbohydrate. So if you're lacking oxygen with the fruits, you'll get the caries. So if you have plenty of oxygen, and maybe you're a speed skater or something, you can easier handle the fruits.
Okay. And so you also reference the work of Peshkin. So how do you take his work into your dietary advice in your practice?
Yeah, Peshkin, he basically describes Otto Warburg and his student Hans Krebs.
Mm-hmm.
And he outlines the citric acid cycle. You know how the glucose falls apart. Glucose is C6. It falls apart in C3, citric mm-hmm. acid.
Mm-hmm.
And then it goes down to C2. But in the citric acid, the cell needs to get rid of plenty of electrons, mm-hmm. which are negatively charged, and protons. So you get acidic electrolytes. So that's what he describes it, basically.
And that's that acidic environment for both the caries and the cancer.
That's right. Too acidic, you will get dissolve the teeth,
uh-huh.
and you may or may not get pain. Periodontitis, pockets, jaw infections, osteoporosis, and everything.
So we've gone over a lot, like the ozone, how it works, to what the conditions you can apply it, the nutritional advice. Are there any things that we did not discuss that we...
Well, the ozone is produced on a higher voltage of mm-hmm. 13 million volts.
Mm-hmm.
So basically, an electron pair will be shot out of orbit.
Mm-hmm.
And then it has a half-life of maybe 20 minutes. So it's an extreme electron acceptor. So that's basically and essentially all there is to it.
So it's very simple. It's non-invasive, it's non-toxic, and it's healing.
That's right. And it will harden and cure the teeth, which is anyway in four oxygen groups to phosphate and calcium.
Mm-hmm.
So it'll upgrade the tooth tissue.
Wonderful. So I would really like to thank you for this interview.
Well, thank you very much. My pleasure.
Maybe one last question. Is there anything people should know when they go look for an ozone dentist? Anything that they need to be wary of?
Well, make sure they use the Helozone X4 machine, in my humble opinion, which is quite challenging to find.
Uh-huh.
I mean, there are some other dentists who use this, but they don't openly promote it because the inspection and the minister will come after them.
Oh, really? Why?
Because they cannot openly declare it.
Oh, okay.
I mean, I've had a visit, the inspector visited 4 times.
Okay.
But I'm not in the BEJ regular, mm-hmm. you know, yeah. I'm not a regular dentist because they don't want to be. And they even, they had the judge have a look at it, but it was dismissed.
Because it's just a legal machine that's legally on the market.
That's right. And yeah. it's a non-invasive. I mean, yeah. as a dentist, only a dentist is allowed to do invasive procedures.
Mm, yeah.
So legally, I'm not allowed to drill.
Mm-hmm.
But they can do ozone because it's not regulated. It's quite a unique law in the Netherlands. It's a BEJ law.
Yeah.
It's basically a quackery law saying anybody can do what you want as long as you don't invade the human system.
Okay.